Mika Latinen joins me this week to discuss his new book, Viking Age Brew. This is Beersmith Podcast number 192.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 192, and it's mid-May 2019. Mika Latinen joins me this week to discuss his new book, Viking Age Brew. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They're currently offering 20% off their all-access subscription pass, with access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com/beersmith to get your all-access pass today. Again, that's beerandbrewing.com/beersmith. And also the Riptide Pump from Blickman Engineering. Designed for home brewers, this pump features a whisper quiet sealed housing, a removable tri-clamp stainless steel head that's easy to clean, and a built-in relief valve for easy priming. It also has the integral Blickman linear valve for precise flow control. Get the Riptide Pump today, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And Beersmith 3 is available now for download, and also the mobile version's out. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider recipe support to the Beersmith platform, along with new integrated water profile and mash pH tools. Dozens of new features, including cloud folders, updated databases, support for fruit, juice, and honey, as well as new Whirlpool hop options. Download your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com and give it a try. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Mika Latinen, author of the new book, Viking Age Brew, about the brewing of Nordic Sahti Farmhouse Ale. He has a website at brewingnordic.com and is an avid homebrewer. Mika, it is fantastic to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, great to be here.
So you're coming at us from Finland today, right?
Yeah, this is broadcast from Finland.
So how's the weather up there in Finland? Is it warmed up a little bit now?
Yeah, we are having summer now. Now it's very, very warm t-shirt weather, which is summer for us.
Sounds wonderful. Well, we're here to talk a little bit about your new book, which is Viking Age Brew. And I understand that's available for pre-sale now on Amazon, right?
Yeah, it is pre-sale now. And I have heard some pretty good comments from Kindle editions.
Nice. Is the Kindle edition out then?
Yeah.
Oh, great. That's fantastic. So you can, I guess you can grab it on Kindle, or you can get the book shortly, right?
Yeah. The publication date is on 4th of June.
12th of June, just a few weeks away.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with an introduction to farmhouse ales. As I understand it, farmhouse ales have a long history and were once brewed throughout Europe, not just, I mean, a lot of us associated with like Belgium or France or something like that, but actually it's brewed throughout Europe, right?
Yeah, in, for example, 1,000 years ago, most of the Europeans were farmers and they brewed a lot of beer. And when they wanted beer, they had to grow their own grains, malt them, and brew beer from that. And this is where Sahti and few other similar styles of beers come from. It is kind of ancient way of farmhouse home brewing.
Mm. And I guess it's probably the ultimate locally grown beer, right? Because really the malt, the herbs, if they used hops, were all locally grown, right?
Yeah. Back then, in the past, people didn't have much choice. They had to malt their own grains and brew their own yeast and build their own brewing equipment from wood. And that's pretty much the origin of this kind of beers.
And then, as I understand it, your book focuses on a particular style called Softy. What are the origins of that style?
Yeah, well, I speak a lot about Softy because most of my data comes from Finland, which is land of Softy. But there are a few other beer styles similar to Softy, like Gotlandstryk in Sweden and Maltöl in Norway and Kotuolu in Estonia. But I speak a lot of about these other beers too, but since my data is collected in Finland, I prefer to call this Book of Softy. Hmm.
And what's the history of Softy? How far back does it go? And you know, where was it brewed? Was it just in Finland?
It was brewed all over Northern Europe. So these all these survived examples like Estonian Kotuolu and Norwegian Maltöl, they are very similar in the brewing process. But at one point in late Middle Ages, commercial and more professional brewed beer started to take over, and this farmhouse ales were superseded by this more efficiently brewed beer. And then these farmhouse brews started to slowly disappear, and now we are left with only few very specific spots in Finland, Estonia, Norway, Lithuania, the island of Gotland.
So only a few places left, and I think farmhouse ale still brewed in Belgium and France a little bit too, right? Or a different style, but still.
Yeah, the farmhouse ale is brewed in Belgium, but that is quite different because it is more close to what commercial beer is now today. And these Nordic farmhouse beers are on the hand, very primitive kind of non-commercial way of ancient home brewing, very different from Belgium style of farmhouse ales.
So how did some of these styles actually survive all the way from the Middle Ages to today? And how close is the style today, you know, style of beer that you're drinking today to perhaps what was brewed back then?
Well, that is a kind of mystery how this style survived. I guess people liked the strong taste and the culture around these beers because these are feast beers which are drink during weddings and seasonal celebrations like a summer solstice and winter solstice, which now we call it Christmas. But anyway, in old days, it was drink in the most special occasion of the year. And I think this helped to preserve the traditions.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the style itself. What is it? What does it taste like? What's the gravity? I think you use herbs in it as well, right?
Yeah. Well, I can pour some of my home brewed Softy, brewed 4 weeks ago, which makes it.
So I'm looking on the we're on the video here, but it's pretty dark beer, really, right?
Yeah, it is dark. Usually dark. There are some pale versions of it because mm-hmm. the variation in brewer to brewer is huge.
So it's a dark beer. What else can you tell us about it?
It is very turbid. You cannot see my finger through it. And this version has fizz to it, but often it is very, very low in fizz, almost still.
So maybe a lower carbonation level, and you said turbid, so it's not clear. I mean, it's pretty opaque, really.
Yeah, cloudy. It is opaque, cloudy.
Yeah. And then what does the style actually taste like? The body, the flavor?
The main thing in Sahti is extremely fresh cereal and malt flavors, and very rich in taste. Because in the old days, this was the feast drink and the best beer a farmer can make. So it should be very rich in taste and very strong in alcohol also. The wheat beer was a shame to its brewer. So nobody wanted to brew a wheat beer for weddings or seasonal celebrations.
So when you say strong, how much alcohol are we talking about? Is it like 8% or?
Today, typically 6 to 9%, and this is close to 9%.
Mm. So 6 to 9% alcohol. You said it's a fairly malty beer, right?
Yeah, there are some notes of juniper and some rustic fermentation flavors, like some sahtis have banana aromas coming from baker's yeast, and this has a kind of fruity qualities, like.
So it has esters in it, maybe some phenolics for the banana, I guess, maybe phenolics, I guess.
Yeah. Many sahtis has a phenolics and a fruity banana.
Now, is it a style that's made with hops or not?
Well, some sahti brewers use hops, but they use so little that it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't taste and it doesn't preserve the beer, so... Actually, we can forget hops as far as I'm concerned.
But it does use a number of herbs, I guess, to balance out the maltiness, right?
Yeah, there's juniper is the main flavoring, and not just the flavoring. It is used in many parts of the brewing process in Sahti.
Interesting. So they integrated into the brewing process, which we're going to talk about in just a minute.
Yeah.
Is Sahti made commercially now, or is it just is it still a homebrew tradition?
Yeah, there are six commercial brewers in Finland which have scaled up the old domestic traditions, but unfortunately, these are not exported to US or most other countries, because this Sahti kind of beer, it doesn't store very well. It is pretty difficult to export.
So it's used primarily, you drink it fresh, I guess, right? You don't leave it sitting around for a long time to age.
Yeah, this is 4 weeks old, and it is already on its... old days, 1 to 3 weeks is typical time to consume.
Wow. Yeah, pretty quick, especially for a high gravity beer like that.
Yeah, and that makes the extreme freshness very pronounced. Mm.
Well, let's talk about actually brewing this style, because I know there's a lot of unique techniques and ingredients used. Let's start perhaps with a grain bill. How do you what kind of grains do you use?
It is very simple. Most Finnish Sahti brewers use both barley and rye. And the main ingredient is Finnish Sahti malt, which is basically very close to Pilsner malt. It is a Finnish malt blend, but Pilsner malt is okay to brew.
So, elsewhere. So Pilsner malt and then malted rye as well, I guess, gives it the darkness and I assume a lot of the flavor.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I have some example of this dark rye malt here.
It's a pretty dark. Yeah, I'm looking at it here. It's probably 300 or 400 SRM or something like that, right? Or Lovibond, I guess, or something like that. It's pretty dark malt. So it's a dark rye malt, and the percentage you use? Do you use, 10% rye, 20% rye? What's the percentage of rye malt?
It's usually, if you use that dark malt, it is 5 to 10%. That is typical.
So but five, then you, go ahead.
Then you can add more of the pale rye malt, if you like. And some Sahti brewers go as high as 50 50% of rye malt, pale rye malt.
That's a lot of rye, yeah. But you're using, yeah. You said the dark rye malt used maybe 5 to 10%, right?
Yeah, that is 10% is absolute maximum.
That's a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
And rye has a very, very strong flavor to it. And you said the rest of it, you would probably use Pilsner malt if you were trying this here at home, right?
Yeah. Vienna and Munich malt are good too, but Pilsner malt is very close to Finnish softy malt. Hmm.
And then you don't use a lot of the traditional beer yeast either, right? You use something a little different.
Yeah. It is typical to use baker's yeast. And
really? So, I mean, you just get like a bread yeast from the grocery store, or are you using something different?
Yeah, normal bread yeast from grocery store.
Wow.
It is around 100 years old tradition. In the past, Sahti brewers used to have their own house yeast strain, which was maintained in a very odd kind of way, traditional ways, no laboratory methods or anything. It was dried on a birch whisk, for example. But then around 100 years ago, commercial baker's yeast became available and Sahti brewers began to use that. And now the old tradition of house yeast has vanished.
Interesting. So you say you can't really buy a unique yeast strain for softy. You would actually go and purchase commercial bread yeast, I guess, right?
Yeah. But luckily, the Norwegians, they didn't forget the yeast. I have been picking up some yeast from Norway. This is dried. Norwegian farmhouse yeast called Kvaik. Mm-hmm. And if you pitch this into wort, it will, in 3 hours, it will be in full power working.
Wow. Yeah, is that, I'm trying to remember, there's a new strain that is just starting to become available here in the U.S. that, I think it's from Norway, that lets you ferment at a fairly high temperature without a lot of esters. Is that similar to what you're talking about here?
Yeah. These are now available for home brewers from yeast labs.
Why white labs or why yeast? I'm trying to remember. I think white labs just started, introduced one of them.
White
I don't
labs
remember.
Has some, yeah. There are some imperial yeast has some, I think white yeast will also have some kind of farmhouse yeast.
And do you recall what that yeast is called? I don't remember. I was actually talking with Chris White about it a short time ago, but I just can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, it is. The name is Quag.
Quag. How's that spelled? I'm not sure. Quag?
Q-V-A-I-K. Quag.
Awesome. That's just starting to come. So would that be a good yeast to use if it's going to try and duplicate this style at home?
Yeah, absolutely. The yeasts which these yeast companies are selling, of course, they are laboratory purified isolated strains, but still they offer plenty of unique farmer's character, which is very unique, kind of not spicy like Belgium strains, but very fruity in a very weird kind of way. And that is really interesting.
Yeah, I've heard quite a bit about it, so that'll be fun to play with. So as I mentioned, rather than hops, you're using herbs, and you mentioned juniper is the main one, but first of all, which ones do you choose in addition to juniper if you use other ones? And second of all, how do you actually use them in the brew?
Yeah, when I say juniper, I mean juniper branches, which are this kind of...
So you just pick, it looks like a fairly green juniper branch there, small one, right?
Yeah. What is really handy about juniper is that it can go straight from the tree to brew. I picked this 2 hours ago from my backyard, mm-hmm. and if I was to brew Sahtina, I could brew it in the kettle right now. So there's no any preservation or thing about storing this. It can go straight from a tree to brew.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you actually use it in the brewing process? Do you primarily use it during the boil, or is there a particular timing, different stages you mentioned?
The most typical way to use juniper is to either make a juniper infusion, which means that you make you add these branches into hot water, and then you infuse the flavor into water.
So you make like a hot tea with the juniper branches, I guess, right?
Yeah. And then you can use that water as your brew water.
So you're actually using that right in the brew kettle or in the mash? I don't know.
In the mash and in the sparging.
Interesting. So you're taking this juniper-infused water. I guess you could just probably just put the juniper in up front, right? And then pull it out before you start mashing? Is that how that works?
Yeah. And very, very easy shortcut is to just throw the juniper branch into the mash. It's not a traditional way of using these juniper branches, but it produces very traditional flavor of juniper, and I like it.
So what are the other methods you might try, or where else in the brewing process might you infuse juniper?
The very traditional way of using juniper is to build Lauterzahn filter from juniper branches. So you stuck them, you put the juniper branches into bottom of your Lauterzahn, and then you scoop the mash on the top of the juniper branches. And when you start lautering the mash, the wort is going to pick some flavor from the branches.
Interesting. And then I assume you don't use it later in the process. You don't use it during the boil, and you probably don't, dry hop with it or whatever, right?
Yeah, well, we come to that later, because in Sahti, usually there's no boil. That is the one
interesting
exotic part of the beer.
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Are there any other herbs that you might traditionally use?
Not much. It is kind of weird that Sahti brewers have a stick to juniper.
Mm-hmm.
So some people have tried to use hops, but they don't actually put so much hops that it would make any flavor impact or would help to preserve the ale. So what I'm thinking is that hops are not really part of the old tradition of Sahti. They don't taste or make any difference in Sahti. So I don't have used any hops in my Sahti.
And you mentioned the whole brewing process is kind of unique. So can you walk us through that? I assume, starting with the grain, I assume you crush the grain. And do you go through a traditional mashing process?
Yeah, the Sahti mashing process is fairly typical, but usually it's very long. It takes 5 to 9 hours, because in old times people used to have their own grains, and they didn't have thermometers, or they didn't know how efficient their grains were. So they just wanted to take the mash through the whole temperature regime from lukewarm to very hot.
So they just they slowly raise the temperature over a number of hours till they kind of hit the right point for the enzymes, I guess?
Yeah, start from lukewarm and then go to warm, hot, very hot, boiling.
Interesting. And I think you also mentioned they use some unique brewing vessels as well.
Yeah. Well, I started to pick up some
of the traditional things.
Yeah.
This picking up a big piece of equipment here for those of you on the audio.
Yeah.
That looks like a giant wooden pail with loops around it. Yeah.
Yeah, this is perhaps 20 gallons or so. Sahti vessels are usually very big because in the feasts it was normal to have a lot of beer.
Yeah.
Like 10 gallons was nothing, and 20 gallons was
20 gallons is a good start, huh?
Yeah. The typical batch sizes were 100 to 200 liters, which would be around 25 to 50 gallons of beer.
That would last most party guests, I think, right? At least a couple hours. So.
Yeah, well, usually the parties lasted as long as there was beer, and as soon as the beer was finished, and the party was over.
Can you walk us through? I mean, how would you use a giant wooden vessel like that in the mashing process? You just continuously adding some hot water to it to raise the temperature, or what?
Yeah. That is the mashing vessel.
So obviously it's wooden. You can't apply direct heat to it, right?
Yeah, except if you use hot stones.
Interesting. That is a
very old and traditional way of raising temperature in wooden vessels.
So they would start with it maybe lukewarm, and then lukewarm water or something like that, and then slowly add hot stones to it to get it up to the... to the point they wanted?
Yeah. I have seen it once, and it is very impressive sight. And the mash is splashing into air and a lot of steam.
Because you're adding these really hot stones, probably boiling away, right? Interesting.
Yeah, it is really difficult to tell what is happening. There's steam and splashes and mash everywhere.
Nice. And then, let's see, so then you walk through that process, and then you mentioned there's no boil process, so apparently you just do the mash, and then what?
After mash, you scoop the mash into water tun, which traditionally was hollowed out log. Currently, I'm trying to acquire such kind of log, which is called kurna. But I don't have it right now. But
that was where you added the juniper branches as a filter on the bottom, I guess, right?
Yeah. Juniper branches, maybe straws as well, as a filter material. Then you scoop mash onto them, and then you start to louder.
You mentioned during the mashing process, they get the temperature pretty close to boiling anyways, right?
Yeah. So...
so they do that before they start this lautering process, right?
Yeah. The mash can be pretty hot, almost boiling. And some Sahti brewers boil their mash in a cauldron.
Hmm. And then, so we go through this lautering process. I assume you add more water at that point as well to draw some wort off. And then how do you proceed from there?
Then you collect the wort. And then you cool it, no boiling. That is the unique thing in Sahti and similar farmhouse ales in Nordic and Baltic countries.
Is there any method they had for chilling the beer or chilling the wort down?
Well, in the old days, it was very difficult to cool wort. And that is part of the tradition. Some people separated the wort into different containers to make it cooler faster. It was in general very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Today people are taking or drawing the wort into aluminum milk cans, and they immerse them into water. That is a traditional way today.
Mm. So after the lautering process, I assume you just pitch the yeast and start it fermenting once you got it cooled down, right?
Yeah, it is. The yeast is pitched as soon as the wort has been cooled down enough in the old days, it was tested by, for example, pitching, testing with your elbow. Is it same temperature as your elbow or with a finger or that kind of thing? Today, many Sahti brewers use a thermometer.
Yeah.
But anyway, they want to pitch yeast as soon as the wort has cooled down to fermentation temperature.
And then mentioned you go through a very short aging process. I mean, it ferments very quickly, and you drink it fairly quickly too, right?
Yeah. Sahti yeast and also Norwegian quake ferments very quickly. It is usually done primary fermentation in 1 to 3 days. And then you transfer the beer into cool cellar.
And I assume it was traditionally probably put in barrels, right? Or
yeah, there were some wooden casks for Sahti.
And I think you mentioned it's got a fairly low carbonation level, right?
Yeah, it is typical. Well, it is similar to real ale. And because of the kind of re-fermentation in a cask, it's not completely still at the beginning of when you start serving this ale.
Right, because it was still fermenting a little bit probably when they put it in the cask. And I think like the one you had the beer there just a second ago that still had some carbonation to it, even though it wasn't necessarily intentional, right?
Yeah. Oh. And when you pour more beer from the cask, then it gets more still and more still. And finally, you have a completely still Sahti. But that is normal for Sahti. Mm. It should not have high carbonation.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's discuss how we might actually try doing this at home or duplicating this at home.
Yeah, well, Sahti is pretty easy to brew with standard home brewing equipment. I'm brewing Sahti with the same equipment as I'm brewing normal modern beer like pale ales and saisons and so on. I just skip the boiling part of the process.
So you skip the boiling process entirely, and obviously you have the juniper is added up front in the mash, right?
Yeah. The easy shortcut is to add a juniper branch into the mash.
And I assume using modern malts, you'd probably just use sort of a modern mash schedule, right?
Well, it is better to use a slightly longer mashing because there's no much room for sparge water because this should be very strong beer and you cannot use a lot of water because there's no boil off. And for this reason, it is better to use at least 2 hours of mash. 3 hours is better.
Hmm. And is that done at a traditional temperature or is there some different schedule that you might use in the mash?
Well, the one which I have found best is I use 60, 70, 80 Celsius. That is pretty efficient way of brewing Sahti.
Hmm. Interesting.
If you want to go really traditional, you should go from lukewarm to very hot without any thermometers.
So after that, you would, I assume, just sparge it and then collect the wort and chill it, I guess, at that point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then you're going to pitch your yeast, and probably we talked about a good yeast to use would be that the yeast from the Nordic countries there, yeah? The quake?
Yeah, well, Finnish Sahti brewers use baker's yeast mostly, but quake is very good option for Sahti.
And then you give it just a couple days, I guess, to ferment and then put it right into, I don't know, a keg, I guess. So you probably don't want to bottle it, right?
Well, you can put it into keg and or into kind of containers where you can monitor the fermentation, because it will often re-ferment. So I'm using flip-top bottles.
So that way you can relieve the pressure maybe if it gets a little old?
Yeah, I can check the pressure and close it again. That is the very, very handy.
Avoid the exploding bottle problem, right?
Yeah, soft in the ceiling is not fun.
No, I've had stout explode in the kitchen before. It was not pretty. It's not pretty. Okay, well, great. Can you walk us through, well, actually, another question I had, which we didn't discuss much earlier. Obviously, your book's titled Viking Brew, and I was wondering if you'd walk us through the tie into the Vikings.
Yeah.
The historical tie.
Yeah. Viking Age Brew, it is a kind of bold statement. It is not obvious. I have spent more than 20 pages in the book to explain why this brew can be called Viking Age brew. And the short version of the story is that we know that the Germanic tribes, Celts, and the Vikings, well, they brewed a lot of beer, and they like to get drunk and have a big feast on beer. They brewed a lot of intoxicating beer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to brew that kind of beer with Iron Age equipment, I mean, no boil kettles, wooden vessels, no brewer's yeast as we know them today, no thermometers, then you are inclined to use methods which are typical for Sahti. The Sahti brewing process is kind of Iron Age best brewing practices. And that is my conclusion.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you. I wanted to ask one more question, though. Can you give us one, maybe a sample recipe for, I don't know, like 19 liters, 5-gallon batch, what would it look like?
I would start with a Pilsner or Vienna malt and then add a slight portion of dark rye malt.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot get the same dark rye malt as I'm using, but you can use caramel rye malt, which is gives a similar flavor. And it is, I like taste of caramel rye malt. It's good malt. And then you could either use baker's yeast, whatever you kind of find in your grocery store, and then you can buy quake from your homebrew store.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, juniper is a bit difficult for many people in the U.S. You have juniper in
there is US. Juniper in many of the northern states, yeah, and some of the mountainous states, yes.
Yeah,
but not in some of the southern states, so
yeah,
it varies.
Or
at least I should say it's less common in many of the southern states.
Yeah, doesn't look like this often. I have seen many pictures of U.S. junipers, and I have heard comments about Finnish Sahti brewers going to the U.S. and they said that all the juniper in there, it's not like what we have in Finland. It's very different. But my rule is, if it's not toxic and tastes good, then you should use it. Then it's good.
It's good, huh? Are there alternatives to juniper? Can you get juniper, I don't know, extract or juniper flavoring? I know you can get spruce, for example.
You can use spruce, but I guess my favorite replacement for that is just forget the juniper. Sahti doesn't need to have a strong juniper flavor. And actually, Finnish Sahti drinkers, they don't like a strong juniper flavor. They want to have a really delicate flavor. And almost nothing is okay for Finnish soft box as well. So you can use just malts, yeast, water. That makes a very good softy.
That's pretty, must be a pretty malty beer then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, that's probably the rye balances it a little bit. Where can you learn more about the history and brewing of farmhouse ales, Nordic ales, Finnish ales? Obviously your book.
Yeah, and then I'm continually writing more into my Brewing Nordic site and Facebook pages, Instagram. And then there are a few other people who are doing similar work than I'm doing. For example, in Norway, there's this fabulous guy called Lars Marius Garshold, who is documenting all his travels in the Baltic countries, Russia, Norway, experiments with quake, everything. He's a really great guy. So he has a Lars blog. And he's also writing a book about this kind of beer. So that should come out next year.
Nice.
And then in Northern America, there's a guy called Martin Thibault who writes in French about this kind of farmhouse beers.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Mika, I wanted to thank you again for coming on the show. Really appreciate you being here.
Thanks. And one reminder, I will travel to Pacific Northwest in July. I will be in Portland and Seattle, and I'll be brewing Sahti there and holding some book events. And I'd like to talk as many beer geeks and brewers as much as I can. Hope you see you there.
Sounds great. I assume you can probably find out about that on your website as well, which I'll mention in a minute, right?
Yeah. The timetable is not yet published, but I will publish it there.
Okay. Again, my guest today was Mika Latinen. He's author of the new book, Viking Age Brew, which you can find on Amazon. It's from the Chicago Review Press. I also want to follow up with his website where you can find about his travels, and he's continuously writing articles as well at brewingnordic.com. Thank you again, Mika.
Thanks.
A big thank you to Mika Latinen for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They're currently offering 20% off their all-access subscription pass with access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com/beersmith to get your all-access pass today. Again, that's beerandbrewing.com/beersmith. And also Blickman Engineering, creators of the Riptide Pump. Designed for home brewers, this pump features a whisper quiet sealed housing, a removable tri-clamp stainless steel head, and its built-in valve for easy priming. Get the Riptide Pump today, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And Beersmith 3 is available now for download on both desktop and mobile platforms. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider support, new Whirlpool hop options, support for high-altitude beer brewing, and a whole lot more. Check out Beersmith 3 and get your free 21-day trial from beersmith.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.